The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gashouse Gang is taking over the Dave Glover Show. Welcome back in. I'll tell you what, it is the day after Christmas, and she deserves so much credit for not just joining us, but coming in studio and being with us. She is Alderwoman of Ward Number 7, Alicia Sanier. Want to talk a little bit about the Ram settlement money. Alicia, thank you. Merry Christmas. Welcome in, and thank you for coming in day after Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you for having me.
Part of the new generation.
Absolutely.
On the Board of Aldermen. Really. We were talking during the break. I live in the 28th ward. We do, you know, and there's been changes there. Younger generation moving in. And
it's the 12th. I think it's the 10th ward now.
The fact they change the numbers around has got an old guy like me confused.
Only 14 now.
But all I know when I'm, you know, keep monitoring the news, it's like, man, every election it gets the Board of Aldermen gets younger and younger and younger. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's healthy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm 29, and so I'm the youngest one of us. And when I got elected, I was 27. And it certainly is nice. And I think ideally a board should be a balance. I think you want to have some younger members. You want to have the group of population you hope to attract. But you also want to have some older people who have experience in historic information and knowledge.
See, that's the only reason why I work at CAMW. I said, we've got to get an old guy in here, like got that old brain. Can tell you about things in the 60s and whatever. So, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
People have been waiting to see what's going to happen with the Ram settlement money. This is something that's been going on for a while. Seems like, I don't know if starts and stops is the right way to say it, but certainly a lot of people have had a lot of opinions about it. You are co-sponsor of Bill number 153.
Bill sponsor, excuse
mm-hmm. me. And can you talk to me a little about the long-term goals for people who don't know what is involved in this bill, what that would look like if that does move forward?
Absolutely. So Board Bill 153, which is called Transform St. Louis Act, is a bill that I'm the primary sponsor of. And then President Green is a co-sponsor. And we filed it. We did a big press conference where the mayor was there as well. And so I've had the honor of chairing a process called Committee of the Whole that involves every alder, plus someone from the mayor's office, plus someone from the comptroller's office, plus someone from the president's office. So for over a year, we've been having these monthly meetings from a program, a software that we launched as a city for the first time, that basically allow residents to submit ideas themselves. So every idea came from residents. And then the phase two was that every resident got 20 tokens and they got to vote on it. And then we also put paper applications in the libraries, and we also did some canvassing. So we wanted to kind of be able to address the digital divide. And then from that, you end up getting Transform St. Louis. And so think of Transform St. Louis as three primary buckets. The first bucket is infrastructure, and that would be $40 million to the water department, $60 million to streets and sidewalks. The second bucket is the people's bucket. And there's two primary components of that. One is an early child care pilot program, sort of. And the second one is a post-secondary support for starting off with city employees. And, you know, if you want to go to trade school or college, whatever, if you went to a high school in the city and you want to pursue further options. And then the third bucket is a development bucket. It's a housing and development bucket. So $70 million is going to go to think of vacant structures and developing and building housing and home repair programs, really all dedicated to the housing within the city of St. Louis. And how do we create what we don't have, what we know we have a need of, and how do we create opportunities to sustain residents in the homes they are in? And then the second bucket is $30 million, and that is for neighborhood economic redevelopment. And so think of, you know, obviously in a city, you have residential areas that are tied to a lot of economic corridors like Benton Park West and Cherokee Street. And so this is $30 million for that fund, and that can be used for small businesses and nonprofits.
I wanted to ask you this as a city resident, and again, thanks for, I'm so used to saying 28th Ward, and you said, well, that's now the 10th. Thank you. And Alderwoman Shamim Clark Hubbard represents us. Mm-hmm. And just the one thing that comes up with people that live in the city along with me, friends I have, acquaintances in different wards, the one thing they talk about, because I know this is something that you feel can be addressed, the condition of the streets and, you know, mm-hmm. things like has been crumbling, and we all look, we would have a wish list. It would be a million miles long, and that would be true of any city,
absolutely,
right? But could you, to the people who specifically are concerned about the condition of the streets and some of the infrastructure that needs to be improved?
Yeah, so from our engagement process that we did that had over 16,000 residents, infrastructure was the top idea in almost every ward. If it wasn't the most popular idea, it was the second popular idea. And if you drive the streets, I know I've lost a couple of tires. You know, it's not hard to figure it out. And so we want to give $60 million to the creation of a citywide mobility infrastructure fund. This would be separate from the city of St. Louis's budget. But what we hope to do with this fund is to really bring our streets and our city into 2024. And so not only figuring out why is it that we have these shortages, which a lot of the issues with our streets, in addition to them just being poorly designed, whereas I think now people want something different from their streets. I think you see people wanting their streets designed not just with a car in mind, but for the pedestrian, which we know that pedestrian violence on the streets is at an all-time high, that we're having a lot of instances where people are hit or they're, you know, even murdered from being in accidents in the street. So we wanted to be able to create a fund that could support the city of St. Louis in both addressing the street design and kind of really an opportunity to think boldly about our streets, but doing it in a sustainable method. One of the things that people may not know is in the city, even though we have a streets department, they don't have a proactive kind of plan. So there's nobody that is sitting back every year and figuring out how should we redesign our streets or what improvement infrastructure projects should we do, you know, that is a professional. Right now, a lot of that is kind of a political process by your alder, but I think you see a new group of us. You know, we just passed Proposition T citywide at the ballot. We are trying to slowly start moving us into a system where you don't necessarily need an individual to get what you need in the city of St. Louis. We want to get you to a point where paying your taxes is enough for you to get the services you need, which means that we need the funding to think about our streets differently. It means that we need to empower our professionals to do it, but it also ultimately means for a lot of these things that we need to also think about what do we need to do for our workforce, which is why you'll see some of the boldest ideas in this bill, start them with your workforce, because we cannot, you know, honestly, we could put whatever on paper, but if we don't have the people to do the work, then it will just be on paper.
It's really interesting that you mention there's been some criticism that public safety is not addressed as much, but you sit here and say, look, if we fix the streets, there's going to be a public safety aspect to it, both from street violence, as you mentioned, and also things happening vehicularly. So there's tentacles to this that maybe some people don't totally see.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the questions we've certainly gotten, even at the first hearing we had, was about specifically St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. So, of course, you know, one of the top ideas in the portal was raises for city workers, which is something that I know I totally support. And so do all of my colleagues. I believe that's something that if we could just do as a Board of Alders, you would see that done tomorrow. The issue when you talk about city workers, and SLMPD is a great example, they have their own union, right? You can't just go and give employees raises. We have the director of personnel. We have the Civil Service Commission. The mayor is the one who's involved in a lot of those conversations. But you can't just go and give wages, you know, give wages, raises to workers. So instead, you know, when it comes to public safety, knowing that that's at the top of people's mind, in addition to the street section, I think the housing section is a huge part of that. When you have areas of your city that are vacant, where the streets are crumbling, where businesses are closed or not operating, you see more crime. Where you have vacancy, you see more crime. When you have, you know, more economic activity, more people in and out, more density, which the housing fund gives us the ability to create, you get an increase on that. And on top of that, thinking about our first responders, so police officers, EMS workers, which the city does struggle with retaining, one of the things we're seeing them say is a large struggle that they have is a lot of times when they have children, they begin to go to other workforces and join other police departments. And so, okay, we can't give you a raise, but potentially we can help save you $1,000, $1,200 on childcare. And so maybe now that helps us to attract a younger workforce, sustain a younger workforce, and also hopefully these things start out as pilots that we can eventually build out to be accessible for all city residents.
It's always tough when a city has so many needs. And, you know, again, we're proud that we stayed in the city and we plan to stay in the city. And, doing our part to take care of it or make it better just through property tax, things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's tough when what we need is obviously more of a tax base. We need more citizens.
Right.
And I know this isn't exactly tied to what you came here to talk about, which is how to spend the settlement money. But do you just, you're a visionary because you're young and you think of the future. What do you think would be the keys to getting more families More people from out of town, maybe more young people to move into St. Louis City.
Well, it's interesting. I actually think that's completely related to this bill. You know, when I decided to kind of chair our process, the thing that I said in the beginning when I agreed to chair it, which was a lot of my colleagues supported me chairing it, as well as the president and the mayor, I just said, hey, if I chair, we're going to have to think transformatively. Like, I don't want to do anything that is just throwing, you know, spaghetti at the wall and hoping something slicks. And if a city is going to ever think innovatively and try new things, then a time where it's ever have more money than it ever has, then would we? And the issue, I think the top issue in the city is population. At the end of the day, we have a serious population problem. And if we keep going the way we're going, we won't be one of the major cities in the city of St. Louis, and we'll have to have some other conversations. And so when you look at the things in this bill, the reasons why, again, the housing, you need to build more housing. If you build more housing, you have space for more people. The fastest population that's beating out in the city is that family age range. So when you start getting to your 25 to 40 age, you see people just bleed out. A lot of times when someone decides I'm going to have a child, they leave. That's for multiple reasons, but certainly tied to education. Certainly. That's one of the first things people think about when they want to have children. And so on the Board of Aldermen, no, we don't have, you know, we're not the Board of Education, so we don't directly impact educational decisions. But maybe we can give you early child care education and cut out a big bill for you. You know what I'm saying? Maybe even for me, I'm 29. I don't see myself having a child right now in the next few years, because I don't know how that would $1,000 to $1,500 in disposable income a month. I mean, for anybody, you don't even have to be low income. That's a struggle. And so obviously I'm going to choose somewhere where the schools are up to par, where there's support for me to have childcare access. And that's going to be tied to my decision to reproduce, or be tied to me not deciding to. So I think a lot of things in this bill, from housing production, from the support of small businesses, from the early childcare program, for supporting children and young people in our union who want to go do some post-secondary option. But again, keeping in mind, we don't necessarily know what's going to happen with the Department of Education. And we do know education is getting higher and higher. So we did certainly, I think, I know the president and the mayor and I had many conversations about, you know, how do we do this in a way that maybe in 20 years, the next time a woman is sitting in my seat, she can solve a different set of issues? Because I think largely the things in this bill, infrastructure, streets, supporting your business, childcare, public safety, these are things that the city has been grappling with for decades. But because we have this funds, I have an expectation for us that we at least try to do something that addresses systematic issues and changes the structure in which we're doing things in a sustainable way. So that, again, in 20 years, if there's a next woman in my seat, she can be solving a different set of problems, because we did our jobs and faced head on and solved the ones in front of us now. And population is the number one thing, like a tax base and being a financial institution. Before we can get to some of my bigger, bolder ideas, we've got to address population. We've got to figure out the city worker issue.
Alicia Sonnier, she is the alderwoman from Ward 7, primary sponsor of Bill 153. Right now, comment period going on until January 31st. That's at stlouis.govocal.com. What can citizens do when it comes to this comment period?
So we want you, if you think of a Google Doc, if anyone have access to a Google Doc, that is exactly how this platform is set up. And so, one, I'm so grateful that the city purchased this software. We had a lot of conversations in the beginning. Some people were hesitant, but now you can do cool things where, like, right now, the only people who can comment on bills would be alders amongst each other. We do that regularly. We make amendments. Now the public can. So what I really want you to do is, like, go into the bill, and just like a professor would read through and make your marks, make your edits, comment and say, hey, we like this. Hey, we don't like that. Something we can see already is the citywide mobility infrastructure fund is getting a lot of comments, and people are saying, hey, we really think that this needs to be have more specific language that specifically says that you're not going to just continue to, you know, maintain your streets in a way that centers cars. We want you to build this, and we want to mention the pedestrians. We want you to talk about how you might build more, you know, bike protected bike lanes and things of that nature. So that's what I would like you to do. The next step is go in. Every part of this bill is up for dissection, and I'll be looking at it, so will my colleagues, so that eventually you will see a committee substitute that will incorporate some of the feedback that we've gotten from each other, from other stakeholders, and from the public via these comments.
Great information. Thank you so much for coming in, especially again, day after Christmas. Really cool of you to do this.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
It was great. Thank you very much.
That's Alicia Sonnier. She is the Ward 7 Alderwoman. This is a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show on KMOX.
I think if at the end of this year, regardless of the record, I think there was a time, frankly, where you wondered, hey, maybe the Cardinals could, like, sneak in the NL Central this year. I kind of feel like the Cubs trading for Kyle Tucker, even though they did trade Bellinger after that, which I think that was unnecessary. And I'm, as a Cardinals fan, I'm glad the Cubs are not treating themselves like the juggernaut that they actually are. It's like in trading away money. I still feel like the Cubs and the Brewers are clear favorites in the division. And frankly, I think the Reds are ready to make a step forward. So I think the idea of the Cardinals this year, what their record is, I'm trying not to sweat that too much, so I'd rather not lose 100 games. I like them to be halfway decent. If at the end of this year you look at someone like Nolan Gorman, like Jordan Walker, like Quinn Matthews even, like you're looking at those guys and be like, okay, that's locked in now. Like, that's what you need to see from the Cardinals.
That was Will Leach earlier today on this show. It's a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show alongside of Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Also, again, thank you to Alicia Sanier for joining us and talking to us a little bit about her Rams settlement money bill. Bernie, I think I agree mostly with what Will said there. I'm still holding out hope that this is a team that can play competitive baseball and can stick around in the playoff race, even if they're not a playoff club. I'll do that while all the other more important stuff is going on in the background. And I don't think it's crazy to think that that can happen. But at the end of the day, if you don't do that, but Jordan Walker gets on the right track and Nolan Gorman gets on the right track and Quinn Matthews arrives and starts to move up the rotation, you're going to be in a better spot for the long term.
Well, exactly. And I think it's hard for a lot of people to get their heads around it, and I'm not being critical, because the Cardinals haven't been in this spot for a very, very long time. That's a credit to the great franchise that they've been. So when there is a dip, there is a downturn, you look and they're not developing star players. They're not developing this steady supply of pitchers one after another the way they did. And we're talking about drafting and developing. We're not talking about wasting money on mid-level free agents who don't move the needle. The people that think that's a solution are just wrong, but we can disagree. But people don't know what to make of the downturn, and people are mad. And so there's a sell the team, or, you know, do this, do that. You know, where the anger boils over, and that's fine. And people should absolutely follow their heart and their emotions. If they don't want to buy Cardinals tickets, they shouldn't. I mean, that's the ultimate way to voice your displeasure. Mm-hmm. But the more and more that I get into this, and more, you know, I just go back and look at all the winning that the Cardinals have done. As I said earlier, I think what they're doing now is necessary. I think it should have been done sooner. And I'm willing, as a fan, to give them some leeway to take care of business that they should have addressed sooner. But just because you were too slow to get around to it, that it doesn't mean you don't do it. And you keep just sort of trying to have a certain payroll and winding up where your product's on the decline, and you don't have a good farm system to back it up, to sort of boost you up. You got kind of get in no man's land. So that's why, and I know I'm taking the roundabout way to answer your question. I apologize. That's why I'm not hung up on whether they're going to be a team that maybe has an outside chance to get a wild card spot. I'm not hung up on whether they win, you know, 84 games compared to 79 or 76. You know, this is a project where it just has to be done. And I asked Will Leach about the Atlanta Braves, and I actually think there is a parallel there. Like, the Braves did all that winning for the longest period of time, and then 2014 through 2017, they missed the postseason, you know, 4 years in a row, and they had a losing record in all four seasons. They were under 500 all four seasons. And I also note that their attendance, which I wanted to look up, fell. I mean, it was still good, just like the Cardinals will have good attendance mm-hmm. next year. But instead of 2.8 or 3 or 3.2, it's going to be under 2.5. But if I go with my Atlanta Braves parallel, I mean, the Braves were drawing a little bit over 2 million during those years. And that's a much larger metropolitan area.
And they don't draw 3 that often now.
Yeah. So there's still a really strong base. This is still an incredibly fruitful baseball market, and fans that are disillusioned now have a right to be, and they have a right to sort of stand back and say, well, I want to see exactly what they do here. I heard what they want to do, but I'm gonna take a step back and just cast a wary eye until I see it. And then it's some of the things start to come true. That's only going to take time. But you look at the Braves down 4 years in a row, and they revived their farm system. They got real aggressive in the international market, which is something the Cardinals need to do. And all of a sudden, you know, the Braves had different people running the baseball operation, like a whole new staff. Do you see where that all of that, looking at what Atlanta did, I just look at that and I'm so, wait a minute, that kind of sounds similar to what we're seeing here now.
Yeah.
You just got to hope that it turns out as well.
Lots of similarities for sure. That's Bernie Michaelis. I'm Matt Pauly, a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show on KMOX. It's a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show here on KMOX. No Dave, no Rachel, no Kevin, no Andrew, but myself, Bernie Michaelis here. But you know who is going to work on the day after Christmas? It is our good friend, Dave Murray, who joins us right now. Dave, thank you for choosing to work today. Hello.
Well, there is a Dave on the show.
Yes, there is a Dave. No Glover, no Dave Glover.
That's
today.
Okay.
Yes.
He needs some time off.
How was your Christmas?
Very nice. Very, very quiet. We were away for about 12 days. We went to Hawaii in the beginning of the month, and then our grandson came out for the about 8 days for the several days before Christmas. So we had Christmas last week, and now we're just trying to recover because he's 5 years old. So it's nuts.
Dave, Bernie Michaelis here. Gosh, so great to hear your voice and actually be talking with you on the radio. All right, I'm going to ask a question you've probably been asked 5 million times, but here goes. You are a St. Louis institution, and my gosh, your staying power and the fact that you're still so respected and treasured and well-liked, it's for anyone in your business, man, you set a template for what all careers should be. However, with that comes things like you're at wherever you shop for groceries, if you're pulling in to get your tire repaired or, you know, because people recognize you. How many times in your lifetime during your career in St. Louis have someone just asked you, Dave, well, what's it going to be like tomorrow? You know, can you tell me? I hear there might be some snow.
So, you know, it depends on where I'm going for the day, but at least 10 times a day. Anybody I meet. Because the weather, I've always believed this, the weather is the easiest thing to talk about. Cardinals are easy to talk about, but the weather is even easier. And so people have invited me into their homes for 42 years on television. And so I'm honored to feel like I'm part of their family. And they've been very, very good to me over the years, and I love St. Louis, just love St. Louis.
Dave, I know some people were disappointed by no white Christmas in your long-term forecast. Yeah, you had mentioned maybe a possibility. Instead, the temperature stayed high. We got a lot of drizzle on Christmas Day. I remember growing up in St. Louis, and I'm 42, so we're going back quite a little ways. It was
scary. You know why that's scary?
Why is that scary?
My son is 42.
Okay.
See, Dave, I thought you were 42.
You look and act like it. Yeah, you absolutely do. And it feels like the climate in this area has changed where we don't get white Christmases as often, and maybe the real cold weather doesn't come in until a little bit later in the wintertime. Am I right in saying that?
It kind of all depends on the season. It all depends on the drivers in the atmosphere. It certainly continues to look like this is kind of a non-winter for us until probably late winter as we get into February and even March. But I've always said that when we were growing up, it always seemed like we had snow and a lot of snow. And we did. We had some big storms. Obviously, the 82 blizzard comes to mind. But I also remind folks that when they're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, they're a lot shorter. And so a 5-inch snow appears like, oh man, we had so much snow. But it's gotten harder to seem to pull out sleds and flying saucers and cardboard and things like that.
It used to be, because I've been on the planet long enough to remember how weather used to be on television in St. Louis. You men and women were never asked to like peer well into the future, you know, and make forecast on trends, what it might be 2 months from now,
sure.
Things like that. So that's my long way of asking, What do you think the rest of the winter looks like? I mean, what trends have you been able to catch on to that gives you an idea of what we could expect, knowing that no forecast is going to be perfect in that regard?
Yeah, I still think that January is going to be a relatively quiet month. Mild is probably the wrong word to use, but I think temperatures will be good, though we're certainly going to see some cold air. I don't think it's anything consistent. That will continue into the early part of February. And then I think the cold air is going to start to work its way into the middle and eastern part of the country. And again, if we can get the link of the cold and the moisture, then we have a shot of seeing some snow. But I don't see a lot of snow in the month of January. I still think the hardcore winter month, it's not going to be extreme, but the best shot of winter is going to be the month of February. How my long-range forecasting, I've always been interested in it, and we used to do on Channel 2 the long-range forecast every quarter. And it got started because my news director came to me and he goes, "We need your help with something. Do you think you could forecast 3 months in advance?" And I said, "With trends and things like that, yes, I do think I could do it." "Good. That's what we want you to do, because we need you to take a bullet for the team in our 9:30 to 10 o'clock half hour. We need at a certain point every quarter to take that half hour out of the ratings so that our 9 o'clock looks stronger than it probably really is." And I said, "Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll do it. I'll take the knife in the back." And that concept worked for about two long-range forecast specials. Then the special started to outperform everything in that half hour, including network television. And it was like, oh, now we have a real problem. Now we need it there because you're boosting our 9 o'clock show. And it was like, yeah, it was kind of fun to do that. And I think we did that for 10 years and still do it on KMOX.
Things like the Farmer's Almanac try to predict things out basically a year in advance. How correct do they get things?
You know, they can hit some stuff. They use solar trends, the effect of the sun, more than anything else. And they use some real high-tech computer modeling that they have kind of developed themselves. I've always said that the Farmer's Almanac is, if you do a bar graph and you just draw a bar in the middle of your page and you have one scale going up one way, one scale going the horizontal way, but no numbers on it. And that's the accuracy rate of the Farmer's Almanac. It's all in your mind. It's all what you want it to be. Because there are times you'll say, "Hey, I wonder if they got this cold snap." And you'll look and you say, "Hey, you know what? They hit it. They're right all the time." And that's just kind of how the Farmer's Almanac works. I look at it, it's got some great information in it besides just a long-range weather forecast. They've got wonderful, nature stories and atmospheric stories and astronomy-type stories, stuff like that. It's a great read. I love picking it up in October and going through it from page to page.
All right, well, we've talked enough long range. Let's go a little shorter. What does it look like over the next few days?
You know, it continues to look gloomy. We're in a very active weather pattern, though. It's not a pattern that produces a lot of rain. So we're going to see another batch of developing steady light rain towards morning. The evening, I think, is fine. And the evening doesn't change our temperatures. We're hanging around 50 degrees right now, only going down to 47. Tomorrow, kind of a steady light rain first thing in the morning, but it should come to an end fairly quickly. Otherwise, Friday is cloudy and breezy, 58. Couple of showers here and there Friday night. Couple of spotty showers on Saturday. Saturday is cloudy, mainly in 62. Some showers, maybe even a rumble of thunder Saturday night, 43 degrees. Then Sunday, partly sunny. Sunday continues to look like a great day, especially for December, with 58 degrees. Let's go through the New Year. Monday, partly sunny, 55. New Year's Eve is cloudy, but I think it's dry, 32 degrees, and then New Year's Day is partly sunny and colder, but nothing extreme, 38 degrees. There are some signs of some colder air coming in here, probably for about 5 days or so for the first of the year.
Last thing for you, I remember when we were talking about fall colors, you mentioned the fact that there was so much rain earlier in the season that might have actually been good for fall colors. Is there any implications to the type of weather we're having right now that could impact things later?
Not so much this time of year. The key to the fall colors are spring rains. And not, we don't want too much rain, but you need kind of adequate amounts of rain. That's the key to the fall colors. And it's kind of tough in the St. Louis area to get great colors. You have an occasional tree that is outstanding, but the spring rains are really what I look at.
Dave, always appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Happy New Year, guys.
All right. Very good. You know, Bernie mentioned fall colors. I lived for a while in Colorado Springs. That's where I met my wife. I was broadcasting AAA baseball out there. And as you go up in altitude, like we would take a close to Colorado Springs, there's a small little mountain town called Cripple Creek, where there's all a bunch of casinos and things like that. Recently, there was the tragedy with somebody falling down into a mine. That was in Cripple Creek. That was really close to Colorado Springs. If you want to see fall colors that are amazing because you're going up into altitude, that's the drive to take from Colorado Springs, Colorado to Cripple Creek, Colorado.
Up on Cripple Creek.
Yes.
The band.
There you go.
One of my favorite songs.
That's so there's a little tourism tidbit for folks listening.
No, I like that. Yeah, yeah. We have my wife has family in that area, so I'm going to ask about that next time they visit.
It's pretty amazing to see. We'll take a break, come back. Got more coming up. We are the Gas House Gang, or at least one half of it, Bernie and myself, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler being the other half. If you don't know what we're talking about, we'll explain that more coming up in just a little while right here on KMOX. Gas House Gang is taking over the Dave Glover Show. Welcome back in alongside of Bernie Miklas. I'm Matt Pauly. Coming up in our next, we've already just about finished 3 hours of this. This thing has moved along very,
We haven't even talked about NA yet.
That's right. We've avoided the future Hall of Fame third baseman who is currently on the Cardinals roster.
Yeah.
I'm burnt out by that conversation right now.
I kind of am too.
Yeah.
I think the people watching my videos are too. I respect that. We were talking during the break. On one hand, you know, when there's even minor developments, I think you can say, well, listen, this guy who covers the Yankees said no way. This person said this. I think what I need to do if I want to ever talk about it again on YouTube before something absolutely happens or not, I think maybe do a shorter video on it. But I think people are really burned out on it. I don't blame them.
This is what frustrates me, because insider reporting has become very transactional. An agent has a good relationship with a reporter. Mm-hmm. And this is not being critical of reporters either. Like, that's part of reporting. You create relationships with people and then you get information. But some of the cost of that sometimes is things are going to be planted, and there's going to be some things that are maybe a half truth or something that's being said to try to drum up interest. And when it comes to this entire story, he wants to be a Dodgers. Well, the Dodgers say that Max Muncy is going to be the third baseman no matter what. Well, he'd be okay moving over to first base for the Padres. Well, the Padres want to cut payroll. Oh, he'd be good going to the Yankees now that Goldschmidt's there. Oh, the Yankees have no interest. Like, it's these messages from all over the place are so frustrating.
There's no doubt about it. And the extra frustration for me is that a lot of times the information that is being reported or speculated upon with informed information comes from people that I truly respect and I trust, but yet one of them has to be wrong and one of them is right. And I'm like, I can vouch for both of these people, but I don't know who's right, because I don't know who's telling them what the situation is. Jack Curry of the Yes Network in New York, and he's very close to the flames there. I mean, he has a great ear and a great pipeline to information, right? And he said the Yankees are not in on the Cardinals' third baseman. You know, forget about it. And he said, I could not be more adamant. Well, I sit up and listen to that, because he's not a hack, and he gets good information from the Yankees. So I don't know. But then the other thing that irritates me is people in our business, and I've been guilty of this at times, although not too much, I don't think. They say something like really strong terms, and then people, like in a market, whatever market it is, it happens to be St. Louis here. Oh my gosh, did you see what Buster Olney said? And Buster's a friend of mine, right? Mm-hmm. Think the world of him. But Buster every now and then will pop off on the Arenado situation. And he'll put something on X, and he'll say, oh, my God, did you see what Buster only said on X? He said there's a very limited market for Arenado. Oh, Well, no stinking kidding. That's not news.
No.
You know, but people act like, oh my goodness, did you see what he just said?
Well, even when Mo first, this was the thing that bugged me. Of this entire thing, here's the thing that bugged me the most. A million people, everybody who had a single source had reported that the Cardinals intended to trade Nolan Arenado.
Right.
And then on that Monday night in Dallas, John Mozeliak says, we intend to trade Nolan Arenado. And all of a sudden, we're supposed to, like, it's good to get confirmation. It moves the story along. Like, there's a new component to it. I'm not saying ignore that. There certainly was a newsworthy aspect to the Cardinals admitting that. I understand that. But to think that this is some sort of groundbreaking news, that the people who just bought themselves a Nolan Arenado replica jersey wasted their money. Like, no, pay attention. Like, this isn't news. And if you're hearing me talk about it on Sports Open Line, that means you were listening yesterday on Sports Open Line when I said Derek Gould, Katie Wu, like whoever reported this. I don't understand why that revelation in a hotel suite in Dallas got the pushback that it did.
It's just strange. Yeah. And it's to be expected, I guess, but it's annoying.
Yeah,
it really is. So I don't know what's going to happen. Let me throw this at you since I brought NA up, but in a way we're sort of making fun of the situation. But I will ask you this, Mr. Matt Pauley, as the days go by, have you shifted at all your view that, you know, he'll be traded? He won't be a Cardinal. Have you shifted your view at all?
Maybe I've gone from it being like a 1% chance that he stays a Cardinal to like a 5% chance that he stays a Cardinal. So I think as days go by and as Houston isn't a destination anymore, things like that, you look at it. But I still overwhelmingly believe that he is going to be traded.
I feel the same way. But I have more doubt creeping in on that. I think, all right, here's another thing. When do you think there would be, where's a date on your calendar, so to speak, where you look at it and it's a certain date and you're like, you know, he might just be with the Cardinals in 2025.
Probably like February 1st.
Beginning of February. I can see that. I didn't have an idea in mind, but now that you say that, sounds about right.
Yeah, because at that point, you're really starting to get ready for pitchers and catchers reporting, and you may say, you know what? We'll take a look at him at the trade deadline or see if an injury happens during spring training. It's the Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show on KMOX.